excited to start the journey towards creating a vision for our downtown library. And I want to
can you get next to a microphone so the public can hear what you're saying? Thank you.
I want to thank each and every one of you for volunteering to participate in this activity. We had a lot of applications, so the choices were very, very difficult. And we tried to get a cross-section of our community member, of our community members. Teresa, join us.
Up there?
You get front and center.
Oh, wonderful. That's what I get for being late.
That's what happens when you come, even a few seconds late. We're really going to spend the evening sort of setting the framework about how we do this. And the truth of the matter is we wanted you to have a lot of input onto that framework. So we're just going to discuss the how tonight. I do want to encourage members of the public that there will be a public comment session at the end of the meeting. So if you'd like to speak, there's a place to sign up. I'd like to acknowledge Chris Crone, one of our city council members, who's in the back.
Thank you so much for serving.
Yes.
This is very important work. Thank you.
It's wonderful that your interest is so great that you're willing to be here. I truly appreciate that. I want to start with introductions. And I usually make people do their I'm Susan Nemitz. I moved to Santa Cruz last June from Minnesota. It's been an interesting challenge. I've loved every minute of it. I have a daughter who's 20 and currently at Brown University in Rhode Island, which feels way too far away. But the thing that I would also ask of you today is I would like you to tell a library story, and some of you have been forced to do this with me. Usually people volunteer for something like this because in some ways a library has moved them. It may not be a public library, it may be an academic library, it may be a childhood school library, but those people have an interesting story, so I want to tell you mine. I, in the fourth grade, was a reluctant reader, struggling very much, and I had the local elementary school librarian say to me, "I dare you to read this whole wall before you leave elementary school," which gave me really 2 years to read a whole wall. I didn't think I could do it. But I am the kind of person who's competitive by nature and chose to try. And before I finished elementary school, I had read this entire wall. And honestly, Mrs. Andrews changed my life because I went from a reluctant student to a person who had self-confidence in their academic abilities. And she fundamentally changed my life. So in addition to your stats, I'd love to hear a library story if you have one.
Hi, I'm Steve Blair, and I'm a technical writer and a technology manager. In the past, I've been the manager of the largest independent bookstore in Delaware. I've taught writing. I've been involved in books and writing all my life, really, and it's been a major part of my life, and I love books, I love libraries, I love the freedom of information and the ability of people to get the information that they need, whether it's in a book form, whether it's in CD form, whether it's in electronic form. It's just such an important part of our society, and it's just very important to me. And I'd like to just bring my passion and share my passion for this with the community of Santa Cruz. And I'm so excited to be involved in this project. I really am. I remember when I was a kid, my first exposure to the library was my father taking me to the library. I was raised in the Philadelphia area, the southwest suburbs of Philadelphia. And our library was in a big stone house. It was an old, you know, personal residence. And as so many, you know, libraries of that generation were in smaller areas. And I remember that the children's section was upstairs in this old stone house, and you walk up the wooden steps and go up to the kids section. And I remember being up there and just and quickly running out of books that interested me. And I'm, you know, recently I was reading Stephen King's book, Hearts in Atlantis, which is his book about the 60s. Not really a Stephen King fan, but I liked his writing about the 60s. And he talked about how excited, or one of the characters talked about how excited he was to get an adult library card as a birthday present. And I remember making that transition myself from the children's library card to the adult library card, and I was just so excited because I had access to Jules Verne and H.G. Wells and all these authors that were accessible to younger people but were classified as adult literature. So thank you for having me.
Good evening. I'm Yolanda Henry, and I have a job. I'm the program director of the Family Resource Collective of Community Bridges. And let's see, we have four family resource centers located throughout the county, and also Community Bridges has other programs such as the WIC program, Meals on Wheels, Elder Day. And we also have a child care division, which has six child care centers, and I'm sure, and Lifeline, we have a transportation division as well. Let's see, I'm a local. I grew up in Watsonville, and you know, I can still say the cheer for Watsonville High School. You don't want to hear me say that. You know, went to Cabrillo, UCSC, did graduate work at UCSC. I have ventured out of Santa Cruz County, my life and my love of community is really here. This is, you know, this is home. And you know, recently I was at some meetings in Watsonville for focus groups on transportation, and it was at the Watsonville Library. And I walked in there, and my mouth just dropped open. I thought, and I flashed back to the library of my childhood in Watsonville, which was the Carnegie Library. And it was, you know, say, stone, and, you know, and it had the big steps, these old, you know, it came right out of the architecture someplace like Boston.
Yeah.
And, the big wooden doors, and you walked in, and it was a wooden floor. And I remember this great big long table that kids sat at and did their homework. And I always remember how, you know, wonderful the staff and how helpful they were. And to this day, it still amazes me because I kind of long to be that kind of a person, and sometimes I fall short of that. But their patience and guidance that they gave me. And also, and I remember talking to one of the librarians, and he had things saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? And at that point, I thought I wanted to be a nurse. I'm not a nurse. But so she said, well, you might be interested in a historical, you know, some history on that. So she pointed me to Clara Barton books. And so I read whatever was available at that point in the Watsonville Library on Clara Barton. And then from then, you know, learning the Dewey Decimal System. And then, of course, I remember going to university and then having to learn the Library of Congress system. And, you know, just seeing the progression of the card catalogs, and I picture that Carnegie Library to going to university, and then at that time, shows you how old I am, they had microfiche. That was the technology then. And now going to, you know, someplace like the Watsonville Library, I was just in awe, and I thought, wow, this is not the library of my childhood. So I'm very excited about, you know, having some input and representing the community and the constituents that I represent. So thank you for letting me be of service here.
Linda Craighead. I think my first memory of a library was probably when I was 6 years old, And I remember walking up the steps in the San Francisco Library, which is now the Asian Art Museum, up those grand steps into the reading room with my grandmother to get a library card. So my first memory, I grew up in King City, and I would walk home every day from school, and we had a beautiful little library, which I don't think is there anymore. They have a brand new library. And spending a lot of time there, and now I've got this grandson, this six-year-old grandson, who has his library card across the street, and he's at that library, you know, I would imagine, actually probably about 4 days a week. So the library is really important to me. I've been in this community since 68, had a long history with it, and I'm also here, I think, because for 20 years I worked for the city of Palo Alto as their the director of the Palo Alto Arts Center and as the director of arts and culture for the city of Palo Alto, and probably 10 of those 20 years I spent working to develop a major library and art center project for the city of Palo Alto. So when I saw this advertised, I thought, well, you know, this would be a place where I felt I could, you know, really have some input and make a difference. And, you know, being both a longtime Santa Cruz resident who really cares about the community and a voracious reader who has a stack of books every week from the library, and someone who has really been through the process, it's something that I'm looking forward to.
So I'm Martha Dexter, and I'll start with my library story. I don't remember the first time I went to a library. So libraries were always in my childhood, but what sticks in my mind the most is when I was in sixth grade, I was living in Norman, Oklahoma, and I remember that I could ride my bike to the library, and that was the time I really remember that I was allowed into the adult area. And I could read anything I wanted. And just the freedom of being able to explore whatever I wanted was so liberating that it just really stuck with me. And bottom line is, I am actually a librarian. And spent 30 years in Washington, D.C. as a librarian. I retired there I was associate director for congressional, for legislative information at the Congressional Research Service of the Library of Congress. But that's not a public library. And when I came here, when we moved here in 2010, I wanted to finally really work in public libraries. And immediately became involved with the public library here as a volunteer. Ultimately, in 2013, I was appointed to the Library Joint Powers Board, and I served there as a citizen member from Santa Cruz for 3 years until the board structure changed, and now I'm the chairman of the Citizens Advisory Commission and representing Santa Cruz again. I'm so excited. I was very active in the working toward passing Measure S, and this is our real opportunity to finally make the vision that we've wanted for so long, especially for the downtown region.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Tara Martin, and I am currently the director of the Integrated Learning Center at Cabrillo College's Watsonville Center, as well as I teach English and writing at Cabrillo. A couple of different threads of library stories is when I started at Cabrillo in 2001, at our extension site in Watsonville, in our learning center, we had absolutely no library services. That was an issue for me and our staff of equity, of access to information and technology, and we currently now have two part-time librarians. We have the technology to do the research. We have a Dropbox for overnight checkouts. We have reserve books. We have a circulating library. It's growing up as an avid reader and a, you know, someone who hunkered down in libraries. That was important to me for our students to get access to those kinds of experiences. I'm also a mother of two daughters who hide out across the street quite a bit, And they have very different reading experiences. The older one is an avid reader. His reading is like water. It's fluid for her. It comes so easily. She's made me drive around to multiple branches in the same day so that she gets all the books in the series and she'll finish them in 2 days. And my younger one has benefited so much from the Reading to Therapy Dogs program. She has struggled some with reading, and so I see all aspects of how public libraries can really just bring us home in many different ways. And I'm just so pleased to be here and look forward to hearing from what everyone has to contribute. So thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here. I'm Teresa Tomei. I'm the director of the Small Business Development Center, also at Cabrillo College, and I should probably know you.
We're a different size. It happens.
It's really funny to hear the common thread of childhood experiences, because I just flashed on a memory that I had pretty much forgotten. I was born and raised in Cupertino, and I just remember being, you know, we were a large Italian family of 7 kids, and we were just on our own, and I lived in the library. Mm-hmm. I remember just spending, you know, I look out the window and go, oh my God, it's dark. That was until I had to get home. That was our only rule, be home at dark. So I chose to spend it in the library, and I'll never forget, I was in first grade and they let me shelve books. Oh. And it so empowered me that I had something to do, and it was associated with reading. And so thanks for pulling off that memory from the bank there. Then recently, my husband actually painted 2 of the murals in the Watsonville Library. And I would bring him lunch and visit, and I would watch the patrons and the literally see the flame of the love for reading ignite in little kids. And I just wanted to be there as an observer. I never even checked out a book. I would just watch the kids. And it really reaffirmed for me how important libraries are to all ages in every community, and how important it is to maintain them for equity for all. And then today, I was in our library, so I'll talk about my experience today. The Small Business Development Center hosted an event upstairs. Once a month, we have a free of charge brown bag, and today's session was on cybersecurity for small business. And it was a really great, informative session. Were it not for the library, I don't know where I would hold that event, because there's such a lack of public meeting spaces that people can gather comfortably and safely. And then, as I am wont to do after the seminar, I stopped in at the Friends of the Library book sale, and I asked the lady, "So what did you just finish?" And they always give me the best advice, and I always leave the book. So that was a memory from long ago, a few years ago, and today. But I feel like I'm really here because of the need I see of the small business community to better use a library that offers meeting space, teaching space, working space that's safe and comfortable and clean and informative. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. My name is Nicolette Janssens, and I work at a financial planning office downtown St. Mary's. I also live and work downtown. I'm on the board of directors for Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks. I serve on the Mission Adobe Committee here downtown, as well as I'm part of CERT. So I'm on the second or third responder team for the downtown area. And as far as a library memory, well, I kind of got my start into community planning because of the libraries. I was here at the Branch 40 branch cruising through the stacks, and I happened to come across a book called The Pattern Language by Christopher Alexander. And it kind of blew my mind that people could design cities. And I'd never heard of the concept before, and it just kind of struck my interest, and it was something that I kind of did on my own until I finally went back to school for urban and regional planning and community planning. So the library has kind of shaped me into the person that I am today, so it's happy to give back, and especially within my downtown community.
Hi, I'm Elise Granada. I'm from the Ma and Memphis Square. Soon to be open. I've been on the also the board of the Downtown Association for a year. I moved to Santa Cruz about 4 years ago from Connecticut. I went to school in New York at SUNY Purchase, where I studied arts management. The thing that kind of drives me in the thread throughout every experience that I seek out is really about belonging and a sense of place. I've always had a real passion for music and the arts, and at the MA, I really love going to work every day knowing that we're creating a space to really serve the community, to be able to gather there, create there, meet each other there. And so I'm really excited to bring that passion and expertise and to this committee as well. My favorite library memory comes from my senior year of college, where I was living at home, finishing my thesis, and kind of unmoored, and being able to go to the library in my hometown as an escape kind of from my house was such a crucial experience to retain sanity and productivity during that time. So often people talk about the mall like a safe place that they can, that kind of, where they can leave all their issues at the door and enjoy that place, and that's really what the library was for me in that moment. And that's what I think is really the magic of spaces like that for the community and public.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rena Dubin, and I came to Santa Cruz from Houston, Texas to go to UCSC in 1989, right before the earthquake, 3 weeks before the earthquake. It was quite interesting. So I was at UCSC, and I was so excited to be there, and they have this great library, and it took me a while to realize they had no fiction. And I was so surprised. So I came down here. Even as a student, I would take the bus down here and come to the library just so I could read more interesting books than what I was assigned. And I have two children that I've homeschooled. They're teenagers now. But we went to Library in Linda, Linda Arnold, I think her last name is, and she did all the story times, and so from when they were infants and toddlers, and then Sue also was there for the school age, you know, maybe like 4 or 5, and I met some of my best friends still, and they're still close with their friends that we met at those library story times, and at this library in Capitola, and you know, now that we homeschool, I'm a homeschool mom, and we use the library constantly. I don't know what we would do without it for homeschooling. It's really a huge resource. But I would really love to see the space here just used. I think there's a lot of potential for the children's part, for the infants. They all have very different needs, I think, with the infants and the school age and the teens. And, you know, now my teens, they want to come downtown and they want to meet their friends. And it's, you know, in a way that feels safe. And I would love for them to come and meet their friends downtown at the library rather than Marini's or some other places that they could be meeting. So I'm really blessed and excited to be part of this.
Hi, I'm Martin Gomez, and my wife and I recently relocated here in September from Los Angeles, although we've lived all over the country. We have 4 children, and all of them are gone. By then, they're on their own now, so I must have done something right. But we've actually been coming to Santa Cruz for the past 20 years, because our oldest, second daughter, went to UCSC, and we were living in San Francisco at the time. So in the meantime, we've been coming back and forth almost every year because she still lives here. We just recently relocated. We're here downtown, a couple blocks away, and getting used to the vibe, as they say. And my library story is that basically I spent over 3 decades in libraries, and by that I mean I'm also a professional librarian. I most recently retired from the as the Vice Dean of Libraries at the University of Southern California. But before that, I worked in public libraries all over the country. Most recently, before USC, I was general manager of the Los Angeles Public Library, and worked in for the Friends at the San Francisco Library, worked in Brooklyn, worked in Oakland. So, I've been hanging out.
I want to just note 2 things. One, I believe with all my heart that libraries have the power to transform lives, and I think your stories show that. And the other thing I want you to note from this is that more important than the facility is what goes on in the building. And so sometimes that may be frustrating to you, but I would like to focus a lot of our discussion about what is going to go on in this building and less of the discussion about what the physical exterior is going to look like. And I just think that the city has not really gone through that process about what are the real scope of services we want to offer downtown. And it's a really important part of creating the right facility for Santa Cruz. Before we move on, there's a couple other people I'd like to introduce. Martin Bernal is our city manager, and he's going to say a few words to you in a few moments. Yvonne Sumano Vargas is going to be the staff secretary to the committee. He'll take minutes, and we'll give you his phone number in case you have any problems or conflicts with committee meetings. We've got Janice O'Driscoll here. She's the deputy director for the library. And I've got Jessica Goodman out in the audience. She's our new regional manager, and she works with the Downtown Library, Garfield Park, and Brand Supporting. Okay? So we've got a lot to cover, and I'm going to turn it over to Bernal, or Martin Bernal. Am I wrong?
You're right.
Sorry. Martin Bernal first. He's going to talk to us about the charge from the City Council to this committee. And I think there's an actual written statement under tab 2 of your purple book.
Go ahead. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much for your service. And I'll tell you a little bit of background of myself as well. I also serve on the library board. There's a new governance structure, which is comprised of administrators and the city managers and the county administrative officers serve on the board of directors. And I'm currently the chair. But obviously before that, I've had a lot of experience working, since the city has operated the libraries for many, many years, 100 plus years. So just in terms of the general duties of city administration and running departments, the library has been part of the city's operations. And I've been here 20 years, 7 of those as a city manager. And of course, lived in the community. My kids were born here, raised here. And my first introduction to libraries really were with in the context of kids, because where I grew up in rural Texas, we didn't really have libraries, so it was really until my kids became of the age where they had to go look for their summer reading, I really got to experience looking at books and that sort of thing in a more traditional way, I guess. But my purpose here today is to kind of let you know about the charge of the committee and generally why you're here. I mean, principally, of course, is the fact that thanks to the voters of our county and city, we have money to really re-envision and to do something really great. And it's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, quite frankly. And I think for the city council and the community, we really want to take the opportunity to do this right and do what create something that we're going to be proud of and that we're going to be able to look at in 50, 100 years and say that was a significant accomplishment that we made here. Our library is really old, hasn't changed in a really, really long time. And I think it's hard for a lot of people in our community to really think of it any other way because we've sort of been used to doing this. And I think many of you have seen other branches, but a lot of members of our community have not. And so I think, this really is an opportunity to start off with a clean slate and really look at, as Susan mentioned, what are really the needs that we have and how have they changed and how can that be reimagined and created into a space. So I think that the council is very open to really looking at all the options as to what really makes sense and how we can create the best facility that we can create. I mean, there obviously will be practical considerations as well. But to the extent I think that we can be as creative and as progressive about creating the best facility that we can, we should do that. And that's sort of, in general, the charge of the committee. In that regard, obviously looking at library trends and needs is important. You'll look at that both at the larger level but also locally here. The downtown branch serves a more regional need, I think, than some of the other branches. So that has some unique things that it provides services and meets unique needs as well from different communities, different demographics in the community as compared to some of the other branches. So looking at all those things is really important. Certainly, you'll want to look at the existing facilities of the building and see how that can make a difference or whether what the opportunities are or the lack thereof with respect to that building. And then also, you'll be asked to look at the other options in terms of where the facility can be located and provide recommendations of pros and cons as to what are the various options and pros and cons to looking at those different configurations, because there are opportunities. Again, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so looking at all the options is critically important. So we expect that you'll produce a report that will outline what the programmatic needs are, what the future needs are, and how they can be accomplished within the various options that are available to the city, whether it's the existing building or whether it's a new building at a different location. I think that the council really wanted this process to be a process that included community involvement in making that decision. Which is why you're all here. And, I was really impressed with just the cross-section of individuals that we have here and the varied experience. It's really tremendous. I have to say that I feel we're really blessed in our community to have such a wealth of knowledge and background. As you can see, the needs are really mixed, everything from downtown residents to the business to the community needs, the kids, families. The library serve a lot of needs, and so how can we best do that given the resources that we have? And there'll be a lot of background information, obviously, that will be shared with you to help you in making that decision. So that basically is the charge, to really look at the options, look at the needs, and come up with a set of recommendations that will move us forward.
Thank you, Martine. I know you work a lot of evenings. You're welcome to stay, but you're also welcome to leave. He has a grandbaby wrapped around his... Aww. He's wrapped around her.
That's right.
So if you could turn to Section 2... we have both a charge statement and some draft ground rules that really I took a stab at, and it's totally up to this committee to create a set of ground rules that they're comfortable with. An attempt to represent a diverse cross-section of the community and to bring different voices. We expect that some conflict will occur throughout these meetings. Just in terms of conduct, the idea that we will start meetings on time, we would very much like your attendance. I know we have a very aggressive schedule. Basically, it's starting now to the second Wednesday of the month and the fourth Thursday of the month, because there are some conflicts on Wednesday for some folks and Thursday for some folks. I have given you Yvonne's phone number. If you can't attend, it would be really great to know. We will tape these meetings, so if you want to listen to those audio tapes, you're welcome to do so. We will also take minutes. We're basically asking for active listening and respect, that we will work together to try to reach agreement, that we will share airtime with each other, and we'll stay on task, which is hard. Refrain from side conversations and silence our cell phones. So in terms of rules of conduct, are you comfortable with those?
I have a question, Susan. Are we also covered by the Brown Act?
So I had a legal determination that we are not, because we are considered a short-term study group. The truth of the matter, in light of the interest in the topic, I think to the best of our abilities, we should at least honor what the Brown Act tries to achieve. So one of the things we're going to suggest is public comment at the end of every meeting, limited to 3 minutes apiece. You'll see that later on. We are going to publish our agendas 5 days in advance, both on the city website and on the library website. It's here. We'll get to it.
Thank you.
Communications, agendas, 5 days in advance on both websites. that electronic communication, email amongst this group is a little difficult because it doesn't make that readily available to the public. So the extent possible, we would prefer to have the discussions in these meetings. And just if anything does occur via email, we will make that available to the public. All DLAC meetings are open to the public. Observers are welcome. And members will have an opportunity to speak at the end of each meeting, in part because we wanted them to have the opportunity to hear what you have to say and respond. But we will also plan community input sessions where we can spend the entire time listening to some of the things that the community wants and is concerned about.
Susan, on the communication, if it says here, if we were to find some information that we think would be valuable for the whole committee, we should direct it to you or Janice to share with the community.
And then we'll also make that available to the public.
Okay,
so one of the things you're going to find for sure is articles about what is a 21st century library and what are innovative things that libraries are doing. We'd love to collect that and share them at every meeting, but then we'll also make that available to the public. So are we comfortable with the communication? Decision making. Our goal is to reach consensus. Our goal is not to reach unanimity. Consensus may be defined as requiring a vote and a simple majority. I think what is really important is that if there are differences are in opinion, that the final report reflect any dissenting comments or opinions. Everybody's responsible for communicating, and are encouraged to do so as early as possible in the discussions. If you have discomfort, please share it with us. If a member cannot attend a meeting, they can communicate their views to a staff member. It'd be great to have it in writing so that we could read it into the formal record. And then the idea is that the final recommendations would be a written report that we provide to the city as an advisory committee. Are you comfortable with those ground rules? Are there other ground rules you would like to add to it? Okay. I have a couple structural questions. Is we have decided at a start time of 6:30. Some folks have suggested an earlier start time, say 6 o'clock. Do you have a preference for one or the other?
I like 6.
I like 6, too.
Does anyone have difficulty with the 6 o'clock start? If that is okay, we'll change all our documentation so that it's a 6 o'clock start time. So the other question then is, do you have a preferential end time? With public comment at the end of the meeting, that cannot always be controlled. But one of the instructions you could give is we're only going to have presentations for an hour, and that there are different ways to try and attempt to control time.
We could try for maybe 60 or 75 minute meetings with 15 to 30 minutes of public comment at the end. See how it goes and adjust either to longer meetings or to shorter meetings. Feels like it's going to be hard to accomplish everything that we need to accomplish in any length meeting. There seems to be a lot of outside work going to be needed. That needs to be kind of crunched and is disseminated to the group and then maybe discussed at the meeting.
One thing I've seen in the past is committees have to take a vote to extend the meeting. Mm-hmm. We could build that into the ground rules if they're interested.
I'd like to suggest, just because I do attend a lot of meetings anyway, work-related, and also given my time constraints, that I think 2 hours is a reasonable
length of time for a meeting with a group this large. I couldn't imagine that, you know, an hour would be, you know, sufficient. I mean, just in the introductions we took, you know, half an hour. So I really do think that a 2 hour, and I think an hour for comment is, you know, sufficient for the public. You know, given 3 minutes each, that would be quite a few people who would have an opportunity to share.
So are people comfortable with a 2 hour meeting?
Are you saying 2 hours and plus 1 hour of comments? 3 hours total? That seems too much to me. Off the top of my head, I'd say maybe a 90-minute meeting with 30 minutes of comment and, you know, take it from there. But three hours was... Mm-hmm. I've been involved in three-hour meetings.
I think you're going to become more efficient if you focus and know that you've got a certain amount of time and can make it happen.
I agree. I'd advocate for efficiency over a length of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then, too, everyone's energy kind of peters out, and what are you really accomplishing at the end of 3 hours?
And so what if we do the 2 hours, and then you have to vote to extend the meeting, and there has to be a majority?
2 hours, including public
comment.
Our goal
would be 2 hour meetings, including public comment.
Yes.
But I would like the hour and a half if we need it for the just so that we can really absorb what it is, especially if we don't have the side email conversation, which I totally appreciate and understand. But it seems like a lot gets done in between the meeting times, and I do, as I said, want to have time to reflect that.
And so we'll start that way. Are people comfortable with that? The next question is facilitation. I would like to be an ex officio member of this group so that I can speak. I would prefer not to facilitate the group because I think that there are people that perceive that I may have an agenda. So there are really three options. One is that you elect a chairperson to run the meetings and facilitate public comment. Two, that you rotate that responsibility between a few or a lot of people. Or the last is we could hire a private facilitator to come in, but I would say we're hiring architectural services as well, and for every dime we spend on process, we don't spend on building. So my hope was that someone or some people might be willing to step forward and play that role.
I just have, a comment, a question. It sounds like what we're doing is working on developing kind of the program for the library. And I've worked in other situations where the architect's team takes on that responsibility for providing that facilitation. And I don't know if you actually entered into a contract yet with an architectural firm. And if so, or if not, I should say, is it possible that they could provide that? Or are they not going to be here all the time?
They are not going to be here all the time, though they will be here the vast majority of time. So we really do need a convener. Is anyone interested?
I'd be interested in sharing it. Sharing.
Share.
Because, I mean, we have a very, it sounds like a very powerful group here. Anybody could do it, and I think it would be easy for us to do.
Would you raise your hand if you're willing to do this, and we'll rotate? Is that okay? Can you write that down? Mm-hmm. And who would like to go next? Did you get all the names? Please raise your hand again.
Oh, you didn't get everybody.
You're sitting to my left.
Uh-huh.
So would you be willing to do this next week?
Sure.
Or in 2 weeks?
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So strategies for completing the task. Again, this is just a wild stab at a timeline. But what I wanted to do is give you, if you could pass that, dates. Sorry. The dates that the meetings will be held. And I included a place. This will be our last meeting at the City Council Chambers. In future meetings, we will try and meet in the upstairs meeting room of the Downtown Public Library. We just had an event tonight. There is one suggestion, and it was, and let's talk about the architect. We have been in negotiations with an architectural firm, and as of 5 p.m., I think we have a contract, so I'm going to announce Noel and Tan, which is a firm out of Berkeley, is going to help us with this program. N-O-L-L and T-A-N, Noel and Tan. Go ahead.
Are they, just a question, are they being hired on contract just to do the programming, not, and then you'll do another hire for the architect when it comes down to that, or is it the whole thing?
They have been hired through this process to help you develop this report, so to evaluate the three potential options, to do some drawings, if you need, it'll be very high level, to do site evaluations, and then to help put us in a report. I am assuming that there will be community processes too, so to help us walk through some of that. So based on a preliminary conversation I had with them, these are some of the things I was just trying to fill in our timeline with the idea that next time we meet, which is June 29th at 2017, it says 6:30, but we'll move it to 6 o'clock. We'll meet in the downtown library, and I think one of the big things that we need to discuss is what's the current library like. So we'll do that assessment of the current library, and we'll do a detailed tour of the library itself. My hope is that the architect will come for that and help us do a discussion around that assessment. The suggestion that they had is that the following meeting on July 12th, we go to a different library and look at it, a more contemporary version of a library. And they suggested Los Gatos in part because it is a library that they were the architectural firm that worked on it. You know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to go back on one of the things you asked is the contract with the architect is only through this process. There will be an open bidding process for the firm that ultimately builds the building. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I would say as the dates move out, there's less firmness about dates. What I think is really important to firm up, though, will be these community input dates. But we really have to have something to show to the community that they can then react to. So if you're comfortable with the next two sort of agendas, which would be really doing an assessment of this physical library and then going to Los Gatos, the meeting afterwards, and walking through doing a tour of that and sort of talking about building trends in 21st century public libraries at that meeting, we can sort of move forward with the agenda and start working more closely with the architect. If people have transportation issues around Los Gatos, we can absolutely work with you so that we can get you there. And we have asked that the public be invited as well. I think the big concept is that we want to have some recommendations to the City Council in November of this year. It's pretty aggressive.
Susan, I have a question about kind of the community context, I'll call it. It has to do with maybe it's part of next meeting's agenda, but having an understanding of kind of what works and what doesn't work in terms of meeting community needs at the Central Library. Also taking a look at some of the demographic issues, that the emerging trends in the population growth. I mean, I've been reading stuff about the housing scarcity in the City Council and other. But, you know, I need to have something to kind of give it more context for me rather than diving right into kind of the design functionality. Will we be doing this?
I will do anything you wish. So you're looking for community trends and context,
mm-hmm.
and data trends specifically for the downtown library.
Yes, but I think Martine said something about this library, and you know, I understand it being more regional. So what does that mean to you as your, you know, it's a delivery of library services? That might help me think a little differently about what the functions might be for the library.
So programmatically what we're currently doing.
Mm-hmm. And what you're not able to do that you hope that the new library would be able to do for you.
Thank you. We will make sure we cover that.
And also, one thing I would love to, if you could cover, is homeless issues in Santa Cruz, because I think it's kind of tied to library use and, you know, as far as how we can design with that population in mind,
I think
that can be part of.
That we will definitely include it in the presentation, but that may be a topic we want to come back to in more depth. Because I find it to be very complicated.
Uh-huh.
And so I think what we'll probably do is scratch the surface. We'll give you some context. But I think it may be a topic we're going to have to go back to and actually spend some time on.
So there's a time that is that we can...
I will make sure it's on the agenda. We're taking notes right now. I'm not. It's the royal we.
I have a question. In... this discussion of how we complete our chart, sort of how we function. You know, we have a lot to do and not a whole lot of meetings, really. Is there any possibility that you might need us to break into smaller groups to attack certain areas or, you know, sort of like three or four of us get in depth into one particular area? Is that a possibility?
And Martha, I just want to say that I want to lead you on a path, but you have to follow the path to make this a truly community-led process. Mm-hmm. So if you feel that's the best way to manage workloads, we'll be happy to work with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a possibility. If it seems like as we discuss things that maybe two or three of us might want to charge ahead and gather information to share with the community and the committee.
I actually think that's a great idea. I think that once we get into this, we're going to find out there's so much work to be done in so many areas that it almost demands the forming of subgroups to go off and study something or work on something and then report back up to the larger group. Been involved in a remodel for the company that I work for, an $8 million remodel, and that was just an amazing large amount of work. And this is much, much bigger, and we did the same thing to make it manageable, to break it down into subgroups. And
I want to go back to the point then of the length of the meeting. You know, if we're having committee reports plus, you know, an hour or 90 minutes will not be enough. And also, yeah, we're only going to meet here for what has been suggested, an hour and a half. But then we're adding work on the back end too, of which, you know, I know I work full time. I work 40 hours plus. So that to me means, you know, another evening meeting, because I wouldn't be able to take the time to meet, you know, for lunch to discuss ongoing things. I'd rather do, efficiency was mentioned, you know, and I think if we're efficient and on task here, yes, bring information from the outside that you think is valuable, but let's hash it out here, you know, we have the public and, you know, and then they have an opportunity as well to... give their input, you know, to be as, you know, inclusive as well.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, let's move on. So we've got the charge and the ground rule. We've got the facilitation of the meetings. We have a general agenda for the next two meetings, and we have a chair. I think we've covered the public input process. And what I wanted to do is talk to you a little bit about your purple books. It would be great if you could bring them to each of the meetings and that we could add materials. I think these materials are all available online, probably not in this order, on the library's website. Tab 2 has the committee charge. It also has then our rules of engagement. We'll make modifications as we discuss and bring them back to you. Tab 3 has our one-page strategic plan. Some detail, a couple pages describing how we developed that plan. That plan was just approved at the beginning of this year. There's a discussion around Measure S, which I will talk to you a little bit about later. But if you want more details or you want to refresh your memory, it's in there. And then just a one-pager about the Friends of the Library. They do really play an important part in developing the libraries across the county. They're our fundraising arm, and they're actually very involved in the operations of the public library system. In tab 4, you're getting into discussions of the facility itself. There is an executive summary of the facility's master plan, which we'll talk about a little bit more today. There is a memo that went to the city council about the concept of a downtown library and parking garage feasibility study. And that will tell you some of the baseline work we've gone through up until now. And then lastly is our code of conduct. This tab is actually going to probably get filled in with a larger discussion, particularly around homeless issues and how they have an impact upon the building itself. So we'll keep adding to this book. And I apologize, the pages that are not numbered, but what we'll try to do is give you handouts with holes in them so that you can add, and we'll tell you what part of the book to add to so that we can keep track of ourselves. The last thing I really wanted to talk about today was just some details and background that I think you need to know. And we're going to talk about this over and over again, so you don't have to memorize it today. The first thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, what's been going on in the library. I think a lot of really exciting things have been happening. In June of last year, we passed Measure S, which gives $67 million to facility improvements in the libraries across Santa Cruz County. We hired me, which I think is an accomplishment. We've developed a strategic plan. We've completely reorganized our workforce. Thank you,
Martine.
And we can get into this, but in the height of the Great Recession, the library had lost 37% of its staff. And we have kept all 10 libraries open. And the way we did that is centralize almost all the staff to downtown. And we sent out particularly our professional staff, our librarian staff, almost as consultants to the 9 other branches. And when we did our strategic plan, we really heard the community hates that. They missed having that relationship locally with those librarians. And they didn't want a rotating cast of wonderful people. They wanted to know Sarah. Interestingly enough, our staff said we're spending way too much time in our cars, and we want to spend more time at the branches. So we've done this reorganization. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten that 37% of the staff back. So what we've done is reorganized into 3 regions with a regional manager, Jessica. And we're trying to do sort of our librarian deployment and our programming deployment regionally. And then we have our circulation services locally at all 10 branches. In an ideal world, we would have professional librarian services at all 10 branches, but financially, we're just not there yet. And we've been working really hard with the Friends of the Library. We have great friends group, but they tend to be branch-based, and we need to have a really strong centralized infrastructure for fundraising. And the idea of doing a capital campaign along with these building projects, really provides us the opportunity to potentially raise a lot more money to meet our goals around these wonderful, wonderful libraries. And we've developed a two-pronged plan around homelessness, and I'll be happy to go through that with you next week. And we've adopted a funding framework for strategic investments. I want to talk a little bit more about what's coming. I'm very blessed and happy to say that the Joint Powers Board, which is the library board, it's called the JPPA or the JPB, or I've heard the LJPB and LJPA. And there's going to be a lot of boards, so you're going to get a little confused. But the Joint Powers Board is the library board. They hire me, and they manage me, and they discipline me, and if they don't like me, they fire me. I have to say that and we'll talk a little bit more about the board, but the thing they did in the last 3 months is really allow us to expand services, recognizing we don't want to just expand buildings. We also want to enhance what's going on inside of those buildings. They're running a pilot project that allowed us, as of June 1st, to add 66 public service hours a week across all 10 branches. So, for example, the downtown library is going to be open later at night, and the Garfield Park Library is going to be open Saturdays for the first time in years. And so we're really excited about that pilot program, but we have to prove to them that our patrons use the library and that we're effectively utilizing those resources. They gave us enough resources to completely replace all of our public computers. We were really in a position where we were rationing our public computers to an hour. You could use it for an hour, and then you'd have to wait till the following day. It's the biggest source of tension in our downtown library. Literally, people are fighting over the computers. I would say most of our computers were on a framework that was 11 years old, so they really needed to be updated. And one of the things that we're seeing is that often people come in with things that they need to do, like apply to a job or fill out a financial aid form, the government forms in particular, that they can't even be done in an hour. So the goal is to replace everything but enhance the numbers. And what we want to do is remove the stress of too few resources and too many people. They also gave us the opportunity to do a one-time bump in our collection of $300,000. We spend about $1 million a year, so $300,000 goes a long way, and it really is allowing us to go after where we have long waiting lists. And for us, primarily, it's the digital resources, but it also is allowing us to create a much richer and deeper Spanish language collection, which is used in the Santa Cruz Public Libraries. We're also going to develop, in the next 3 months, we're going to implement wireless printing. More and more of our users are coming in with their own devices. One of the challenges of that has been that they're trading out their home computer and their home internet access for a smartphone. And what's interesting is then they have to fill out the FAFSA. So even relatively affluent people are showing up saying, I've got to print this. Mm-hmm. I've got to do something that I can't accomplish on a phone. So it's a really kind of interesting new trend that is sort of bumping up again the stress around the computers. We get to develop the design and concept for the downtown library. We're excited about that. My hope is we'll have a really good understanding of what we want by the end of the year. We're actually going to break ground early next year on both Capitola and the Felton Branch libraries, and those are total new buildings in each community. And next year we celebrate 150 years of the Santa Cruz Public Libraries. We're really very proud of that. There's some really interesting stories about the early days, and we can't wait to celebrate that. It's wonderful that we get to contemplate these new buildings at the same time. I wanted to talk about the JPA. This is the group that Martine is on. We've had some significant governance changes. We had a library board that consisted of elected officials and members of the public. In the end, that didn't work as well as people had hoped. So a new joint powers board was created that consists of the three city managers of Capitola, Scotts Valley, and Santa Cruz, and then the county administrator. So there are four people on that board. The library is housed in the city of Santa Cruz administrative infrastructure, and we pay an overhead charge to them. So they run our accounting systems, our payroll systems, and our employees are technically employees of the city of Santa Cruz, and they bargain through the city of Santa Cruz bargaining units. Okay.
What's the indirect rate that the
they don't do it as a percent. We do an elaborate cost study, and it has been a source of rancor with the board.
Sorry,
No, I think it's okay now. Historically, it was at 5.5%, and then now we've gone to a cost allocation. I think it actually has come down a little bit.
And I when I look at it,
it's
I think we're getting a very good
deal. Yeah, it's pretty good.
The really complicating factor in the Joint Powers Board is that the Joint Powers Board has the administrative responsibility for the operations of the library, but the facilities are owned locally. So the Joint Powers Board really has no say of how the city of Santa Cruz is going to spend its Measure S funds in terms of developing or remodeling any of those three libraries. It really is the city council's responsibility to spend that money. I'm very happy that the city council and Martine have been very inclusive in terms of working closely with the library to develop something that we all want and desire. But I just have to say that the sort of administrative arrangement is different because today I sit here reporting to the city council. On a different day, I may sit here reporting to the Joint Powers Board with different responsibilities. Does that make sense at all?
And Watsonville doesn't come into play at all. So
and Watsonville has a separate library tax.
I have a question. You mentioned that the local libraries, like the city of Santa Cruz, is the city owns that. However, Felton is in the unincorporated area of the county, and might I say that most of Santa Cruz County is unincorporated. So with libraries located in those areas, who owns those?
The county,
yeah.
And in the case of La Selva Beach, that is a leased facility, and the current Felton Library is leased, but the future one will be owned by the county.
Well, we don't try to run the system where, you know, it's along geographical lines, because people don't really operate that way. And that's actually probably one of the somewhat unique features, I guess, of our downtown branch, is a lot of people come downtown for all kinds of reasons, and many of the users aren't, it's just not inclusive city of Santa Cruz residents. And similar with other branches as well, so, you know, to the extent that they can run seamlessly, and people don't necessarily think, well, I'm now in Santa Cruz, I live in Capitola, so therefore I can't use that. We don't want it to work that way.
Okay. Within your purple book, there is a summary of the facilities master plan. This was a study that was done in 2012 by Group 4, which is an architectural firm. Martin, do you know where they're located?
I think they're in San Francisco.
South San Francisco. The goal of the facilities master plan was to really lay the groundwork for a major investment in facilities across Santa Cruz County. They wanted to create modern library facilities. They looked at each of the 10 libraries. The piece that we've summarized for you is the downtown section of it. They created sort of three types of recommendations per branch: a maintain level, a gain level, and an obtain level. Maintain was really looking at just the deferred maintenance of the facility itself. Gain was to add some features to it, but the truth of the matter is you cannot do gain without doing a maintain as well. So it's cumulative. But the last concept was an attain goal, which really was what would happen if we took it down and started from scratch. And you can see various cost estimates. I have to say, in working with the Felton branch and the Capitola branch, the inflators that were used in the facilities master plan have probably understated these costs, that the construction costs are rising much more quickly than people anticipated during the Great Recession when it was a good time to build. Right now, there's just a lot of competition in the marketplace. I think the other thing that is true about inflation in construction is the longer you wait, the more expensive a project becomes. Now, that is not to hurry you to a decision. It's really so that you understand, though, that there are incentives for us to move more quickly, financial incentives. So Measure S, after looking at the facilities master plan, when you look at the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, I'm going to use the word that most of them were woefully out of date. The downtown library has not had a major improvement since 1968. And when we get there in 2 weeks, you'll be able to see that. Our infrastructure systems are failing. They're failing regularly. It is not ADA compliant, and it really was designed with 1968 in mind. So there is a lot of work to do. As a result of that study, a wise group of people worked very hard, and I'm grateful because some of them are in the room, to pass Measure S, which would provide the $67 million for facility improvements. That passed in June of 2016. I had taken this job not knowing, and I was driving over a mountain, I think in Montana, when they Janice called me and said, it passed! So we're very, very excited about it. But we really, according to the bond sales, have to use up the money by 2025. So there's really an 8-year cycle where we have to be done and paying our bills by 2025. You can see how the money was distributed across the four jurisdictions. That distribution was a political compromise, not necessarily based on need. If we go back, you could argue that to rebuild the downtown library would be $25 to $35 million. The city of Santa Cruz has gotten $25 million to do all three libraries. And I would say in almost every case, the Measure S money is a lower dollar amount than the facilities master plan contemplated from the perspective of the attain level of the project.
Teresa, sorry, can I interrupt you with another question? So when you said the city gets $25 million for all three libraries, are you referring to the downtown branch, Ransaforte, and
Garfield Park?
So the county's $26 million allocation, does that include the new build of Felton and Capitola, or just Felton?
So the county's money goes towards Felton, Boulder Creek, mm-hmm. La Selva Beach, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Okay, so Capitola.
There is a little money in there for Live Oak.
Live Oak is a fairly new.
Live Oak and Scotts Valley are in really good shape. Some of this money does go to Scotts Valley. Part of the infrastructure was not redone when they just remodeled that 5 years ago. So this will go back and do things like the HVAC system in the roof.
Can I add? For our distribution, the city's distribution, we've allocated $2 million for Garfield and Ransaforte and $23 million for the downtown. downtown branch. We're trying to maximize the dollars for the downtown branch. Luckily, Garfield branch is in pretty good shape. So I think $500,000 of that was for that. And then Brandon's a 40. It's not in great shape, but $1.5 million will bring it to the a much better position that it's at.
And the great news about Brandon's a 40 is it has beautiful bones. It does.
Mm-hmm.
If we could really just invest in remodeling that building, redoing the roof and some of the infrastructure piece, I think the community will find it to be a spectacularly beautiful library when it's done.
And just for your information, too, so we started the process already on trying to get those moving sooner rather than later. So hiring a project manager, allocating the funds for those two branches. So work will start on those just because it's more straightforward. Like Susan said, it's more remodeling, fixing the ATAC system, the carpeting, all that sort of thing. So those will be moving forward. This is the more significant one.
Martha, did you have a question? So that brings us to 2016, which was last fall, and the city commissioned a feasibility study to explore the concept of the library as multi-use facility. In some ways, I think part of what was driving this is resources available. They completed a study of putting the library on Cedar Street in conjunction with a parking garage on the top. The project costs for that are $23 to $27 million. The detailed analysis that was given to the City Council is included in your packet. And the City Council, as a result of those meetings, actually made several requests of the city staff, one of which was to create this committee to really look at the scope of services for the library. Other things include finding solutions for the farmer's market, analyzing parking, and TVM.
Those are really the three, looking at the parking needs, the library needs, and the farmer's market.
And so there are different committees studying those things. Okay, so I don't want to limit your options too much, but in terms of developing contracts with architects, they want to know how many drawings they have to draw. So I think our three basic options that we need to look at is remodeling the library on its current site, rebuilding the library on its current site, or rebuilding the library as part of a parking garage on Cedar Street. That is not meant to close down further discussion, but it is, I think we have to answer those three questions first before we go too broadly afield from that. That's sort of in my charge of the analysis.
Can I add one other thing too? With respect to the concept that was brought forward of the combined parking garage and library, I just want to emphasize that this was conceptual. So this, by any means, did not mean that the building had to be configured exactly this way or look exactly this way. It was really more intended to see whether it was fiscally and practically feasible to have such a combination. But insofar as layout and square footage and design and all that is completely open.
Not to get too off topic, but was the city, is the city, like, these are the three, that's the parking garage area, this one on Cedar Street, that's the only other site that would be considered besides the current site.
That was the one that was looked at, and the reasons for that one is because that's city land that's already owned by the city, so we don't have to acquire or buy it, and it's a large parking lot. So it's relatively easy to construct. Otherwise, you have to assemble properties. You have to buy them out if you had to find another location. And also, it was the site that was large enough to accommodate, I think, one of Susan's interests in, as far as the library and the modern library was to try to have a lot of retail and street frontage and to have it be sort of as large as possible.
On a single story.
So it was really looking at which side has the most flexibility in terms of trying to meet the various needs of the library. That side had been designated for future parking garage in any case, and so and we are looking at with respect to parking. We are long term have been looking at consolidating parking in the downtown, in large part because we have a lot of parking lots throughout the downtown, and the long term vision is to not have a lot of parking lots because we want to put those lots to higher and better uses, whether it's housing or other things. And so, like a lot of cities have done, like Boulder, for example, or San Luis Obispo, they consolidated parking into a few structures instead of a lot of asphalt parking lots. So that was kind of how the idea came up. You know, this is long term. You know, can it work? So again, it was part of what is the concept.
I have a question. Actually, I have two questions. One is, so I think the goal is for the library to remain open during this entire process, right? Is that something that's up for debate, or is that, I mean, it seems like...
I think it's a really, really good question. Of course the goal would be, that, you know, this is our highest circulating library, it has our greatest number of visitors. The concept of closing it for 18 months to 2 years is devastating. The alternative is, one alternative is to have a temporary site, but the cost of that, I've done this before with another library, and it was the same situation. It was the largest library I was working with, and we had a temporary site for 18 months, and it was very expensive, and that cost comes out of the project cost, so it reduces the amount you can build. And so, we're working to a budget. So one of the things that I think you're going to feel in this project is tension around budget. And so I suspect we'll keep having these conversations over and over. There are choices the community have to make. But I struggle with closing that, with the amount of business we have, that particular branch down.
It's a major consideration, and that's just, I'm bringing it up because it's something that we have to think about. If we really, really want the library to remain open, there's going to have to be a lot of planning around that, and a lot of possible compromises around it as well. We don't have to drill down into it.
I think we will drill down in the future.
Yeah. And then the second question I had was if we do go the way of, for example, say, that parking garage on Cedar Street and utilizing that structure, do we get money back from the structure that we have now when that structure is torn down or repurposed for something else? Does that go into the library budget or into the city budget?
It creates another asset for the city, and since these are all city-owned buildings, that is, it is possible to then take the value of that asset and apply it to the new building. Because either way, I mean, whether we do a remodel or a new building, we anticipated having a gap of some sort, because as Susan mentioned, the bond measure itself, we knew wasn't going to get us the full amount. And then also with construction costs going up, it's even getting bigger. So, you know, it does allow for the opportunity to do that if we want to do that.
I have a crystal ball question for you,
Martin.
Do you if we decided to remodel the current facility, would the Cedar Street site still become a parking lot? Is it pretty much zoned? Is it decided? Or would that be a whole other decision point for another body?
Well, that would be a future decision. I think it's the long-term plan, the downtown plan envisions that as a mixed-use site. And so I think ideally one would be mixed-use, whether it's retail, commercial, housing, and parking. That's sort of been the vision for doing that. Because, again, even from a parking perspective, there's not a lot of sites in the downtown where you can, have a consolidated parking structure either. But long-term, that's what it would be, some kind of mixed-use project. But that would be the future. Did that answer your question?
It does. Can I ask one more? So the parking facility that's on across Cruzeiro, that's city-owned as well, right?
The
two-story garage?
Yes.
Okay.
And I just want to offer that the people that did the analysis around the parking are available to us, and we could bring them in if you're interested in sort of unpacking that as well.
Was there ever an option of developer finance or supported project? Is that on the table or off the table, or does a bond restrict that or not permit that?
The bond doesn't, I don't think, restrict that. The question would be really finding something that would be viable. And, you know, at this point, you know, from our downtown economic development experience, there's nothing that would be viable that we're aware of, at least in the immediate future, to do that with developers. There is interest in doing housing downtown, and there's some projects moving forward on those things. One thing about Santa Cruz that is a challenge in general with respect to development is that the price of properties of land is incredibly high, and also construction is high compared to over the hill. So we have a hard time, quite frankly, sometimes, and the economies of scale here are not as large as in other areas. So we have a hard time doing those sort of partnerships, and they do require also some time to put together. Mm-hmm. But we can certainly explore that, more of that, if you like.
It looks like we have an audience that has real interest in speaking to you. If you're comfortable with that, we'll move to that portion of the program. Our team, thank you for staying for the whole meeting.
I did have one. Can I ask one thing before we move? Is there anything that we should be doing in the next 2 weeks that would facilitate the next meeting to be efficient and to just,
one of the things I would love for you to do, if you have time, it's not a requirement, but it'd be nice for you to walk through the library at some point in which it's open and observe how it's being used. That would be a really useful thing for me. And then it'd be great if you could think about questions you have about the facility itself. I think we're going to start giving you the articles to read, but I think we'll hold off just 2 more weeks before we overwhelm you with that.
Susan, I just want to say I will not be at the next meeting, partly because I am going to the American Library Association meeting in Chicago, and it's that weekend, and this before. And I have already scheduled myself to go to every meeting that they have on new library buildings and design and, you know,
and all the events
and everything else. So I will be bringing back lots and lots of things to share with her.
Yes, and that's a child getting there.
By my Sunday night. I will be at Las Gatas on July 12th, but I will, whatever information I get, I'll funnel through Susan and Janice to get.
And if you have things that you want to share with the group, please just send them to any of us.
I would also offer if there's any additional questions that come up related to the, you know, any of the city ownership of the buildings, the facility maintenance, or any of the materials related to the city, please feel free to give me a call or come by the office if you have questions.
Thank you. And if we could begin, you have a list of people who are interested in speaking.
Yeah, I have a list right here, so go ahead.
And we're going to limit it to 3 minutes, if that's okay.
We'd like you to stay and hear us.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Richard Buckingham.
Oh, could we just go on up?
I was figuring it was going to be in order. Is there no Richard not here? Mark D. Lee?
I'm going to defer myself and come behind this gentleman, Jack Nelson. I'm switching up the order.
Oh. Okay, Colonel Terry Maxwell?
I'll defer also to others.
Steve Blair, you're on here. I think that was a mistake. So Jack Nelson, go. Jack Nelson.
Yeah.
Get to go first. Hi, I'm Jack Nelson. I'd like to begin by thanking you for your service to the public, being members of this committee, and thank the library staff. I'm also a library supporter, and I'm happy that Measure S passed and that there's an opportunity to consider upgrading a downtown library, which I've been a user of since 1980. I also feel that I serve as a public servant in a certain capacity. I was trained as an architect and environmental planner. I worked for the County of Santa Cruz as a land use planner and environmental planner. I'm retired now, and I'm a student of climate change. I completed a course in planetary climate science at Cabrillo College a few semesters ago, and I follow that closely. Where we are right now is we're right across from the library. We're across from the Civic Auditorium. We're in a kind of civic center here. We're also, if USGS mapping is correct, about 17 feet above mean high tide level down there at the margins of the ocean. I carry around this bag on my shoulder of concern about climate change, and it relates to the work of your committee, because we need in Santa Cruz to become yet more sustainable. We talk sustainable, but we don't always do it. I'm very concerned about the proposal to build another parking garage downtown. If we are going to become sustainable, we need to be using public transit. We need to be creating a walkable city and a walkable downtown. I can say for myself, I live on the east side and rode my bike here this evening, as I do when I come to the downtown branch. If your library project is hitched to this parking garage, you are in for a fight. I think it's that simple, because I know of many people besides myself who are very troubled by the idea of another parking garage downtown. It's not just a greenhouse gas emissions, auto-centric kind of project, but it's also a kind of land use message that we're still going to work with the automobile, which, even if it's electric, is the most energy-intensive way of getting around that you can come up with. Whereas when people are willing to sit together on a bus or a train, it's the energy demand is far less. So even a 400-mile range Tesla, it hauls around 1,300 pounds of batteries. And if you can picture hauling that over the hill, that's a lot of energy. Am I out of time? Well, I think you sort of got the drift of where I'm going, and I won't be at all of your commission meetings. I will send you electronically, as the chair of the Sierra Club Transportation Committee, a letter that the Sierra Club wrote to the city on this subject. So I hope I'll be able to get that to you via your staff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jean?
Yes. Hi, my name is Jean Brocklebank. It's a pleasure to be here. This is one of the best public meetings I have attended, and I attend a lot of public meetings. I heard Steve talk about love of books and information, and Yolanda talking about helpful staff. Alas, we've lost 37% of our helpful staff. Tara talked about information for her two daughters. Teresa, the Italian family, talking about love for reading in little kids. Rena talked about leaving UCSC so she could come to the library to focus on her studies. The reason I mention this is because I voted for Measure S. I have been using the downtown and other libraries since 1979. My daughter grew up here using those libraries. I want you to remember, as you continue in this process, that modern does not remove these key goals. That old should not be a pejorative. Because I'm old, I'm 72, and with age comes wisdom. And wisdom is part of learning. I'd also like to say that we are blessed to have Susan Emmetts as our library director. I have only met her recently in the last 6 or 8 months. We are blessed to have her. I'm very pleased to hear the strong public component of the process that's going on here. I'm very happy to hear that. I was a little concerned about subcommittee meetings because they would be held out of sight of the public. And this public process that I've heard tonight is just terrific. And even though the committee doesn't necessarily have to follow the Brown Act, I like the spirit of that. I may have something else to say here. Yes, I do. I want you to know what I am for, not what I am against. I favor a remodel, rehabilitation, rebuilding, all those little RE words, renewal of the existing library. I think that's where, I am hoping that that's where this committee goes with its recommendations, and I want you to know that there is a great deal of support for that in the community. I think we can do a top-notch job by taking where we have already been and enhancing it. Thank you very much.
Bravo.
Susan Wirt?
Well, I won't second what that woman said. My name is Susan Wirt, and what I love too, I didn't even get to go to libraries when I was a child. My parents never told me there was a library. I went to a gerrymandered high school. There wasn't even a library in my high school. We didn't have books. We had to swear on the Bible whenever we were did something wrong, and I never got struck by lightning. I did that a lot. And I also love the farmer's market. And I was told at our Pride event, the last Pride event, that other than the parking lot, we don't have anywhere to end our Pride parade because we can't afford San Lorenzo Park, which is a crying shame. Because I used to hitchhike over here from San Jose back in the 90s and the early 2000s until I moved here to go to our Pride parade because it was wonderful in that park where it ended. But as far as our community goes, I think they voted for Measure S thinking that they were getting an improvement, a rehab on this library here. I think that's what all of us expected. Okay? Thanks.
Dana Bagshaw?
Hello. So I'm, like many of you, relatively new to Santa Cruz. I grew up with a love of the library, like you. And my grandkids are at the library downtown practically every day. I'm afraid it's like a babysitting service for them. My granddaughter is a junior in high school now. And when I told her that they were talking about building a library with a garage on, parking garage on top, she said, "What?" with horror in her face. "Not our library. It's perfect just the way it is." So, I mean, this is the kind of emotion that people can feel about libraries, I think. And so as you were sentimental about your library, there's people that are going to be sentimental about this library. I love the way I heard Martha talk about she rode bike to hers, and you spoke about riding the bus. I'm very active in the climate change issues, and also with the Campaign for Sensible Transportation, supporting the bus. People know me for that. And I have a vision of a green city. There's a wonderful book called The Walkable City. It's in, I hope it's in your library. have you read it? Has anyone read it? It's a wonderful book. Please get it and look at it. And it just talks about how we need green cities. And this is my vision for the library downtown, not underneath the parking garage, which is only going to invite more cars into the city and more traffic. But a place that people will feel drawn to, that they can walk to, they can ride their bikes to, and will feel like a home for them. So that's me. Thank you. Oh, here it is. J.
Jeff Speck is the author. It's an excellent book. Thank you.
Judy.
Good evening. My name is Judy Grunstra, and I'm a librarian. I've worked in the Watsonville Library for about 10 years, and it's a joy to see families and people from all walks of life using that library, really appreciating the building. So thank you all for serving on this committee, which entrusts you not only with guiding the design process for the Central Branch, but also, maybe you didn't realize it, but you are going to be responsible for maintaining what makes up our downtown civic center, the City Hall, Civic Auditorium, and the library. Removing the library from this site to the ground floor of a parking garage seems a very cut-and-paste, kind of a slapdash approach to planning. The library did an extensive facilities master plan, and I hope you will revisit the option to utilize the present site, even if we're told that the library will get more bang for the buck if combined with a garage. We may not be able to include everything we want on our wish list right at the start, but we can work towards that. The beauty of Santa Cruz's natural environment should be enhanced by an attractive built environment that reflects Santa Cruz values. A parking garage with a library shoehorned into it is not the project that we will point to with pride. There's a lot of public outreach that needs to be done, and it's kind of disturbing that the public was not asked sooner in the process what they thought of this whole idea. I've actually designed a draft of a brief survey that I would like you to consider. I'd be willing to help distribute and tabulate the results. I realize there is a time frame, but please don't rush this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Reed Searle?
I'm sure. I agree with most of what Jean Brockelbeck said, except I'm not sure that age gives much wisdom. And I have a few years on Jean, and so I know. But my only point that I want to make is that I know the times change, but libraries have a historic function, and that function is books. And I hope you remember throughout your deliberations that the most important thing that you can do is to maintain the viability of and strengthen the library and its books.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Erica? Okay, Elaine?
Thank you. Yeah, I had to go and come back. I wasn't sure if this was... I'm very concerned about the parking garage. And I've lived in Santa Cruz since 1969, proudly so, to escape the metropolis science fiction nightmare of Santa Clara, San Jose. With much respect, I hope that you all will think realistically we need a healthy social bonding within comfortable community for all who are living here. I urge our city leaders to not build a monstrous parking garage. We need another level of mass transit, along with electric quiet trolley cars with friendly bells and small buses such as in Europe. We can't afford more people, as there is never enough room, especially given the most crucial issue, water. And we do not need to, please don't destroy the city we love. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for all your hard work. I know it's quite a lot to come to all these meetings. And I'd also like to say that I have a young son, he's 5, and our neighborhood park is, or neighborhood library, Scarfield Library. And I'm happy that you guys are not going to spend a lot of money on it, because it is pretty reasonable, so great choice. It's great to get downtown right. And I, too, am really concerned about the idea of having a parking structure underneath the library. I ride my bike when I take my son to the downtown library, and I can't imagine riding my bike and then having to walk up a garage to take my child to story time. It just doesn't feel like it would be right. And so, I, like everybody else, I'm really just encouraging, please seek out the other alternatives. I think it'll just have a better feel for the city, and it'll go along as well with the city's climate action plan. I don't see how the city's climate goals will be met with another parking garage. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead, yeah.
Thank you for having me. My name is Mark Lee. I'm an active in the actually Measure S ballot measure working with the Democratic Party, and was very happy that we got money allocated for the Felton Library, which is one of my favorite. We right now we're doing we're checking out books in a church right up the street. It's very quaint at Felton, but if we want to. Thank you very much for your service. I also am a city planner like Jack. I have an environmental planning master's degree and have worked in various cities and counties in California, Oregon, and Washington. And I've done a few of my library rehabilitation projects that I can put on my resume. So anyway, this is going to be a rather complex process. There's a lot of political and community issues at stake here that are going to have to be aired out. Well, the most important thing is when I actually voted for the Measure S allocation of the money, I thought also that the $29 million that was actually decided on at the Joint Powers Agreement budget hearing was going strictly to the rehabilitation of this wonderful building here that we've been using. Mm-hmm. I also use not only the outlying county libraries for doing research and planning activities and environmental impact reports, but I also come here quite often to use our central library. But I also enjoy, like many of the citizens here, our valuable cultural resource called the Farmers Market. It's been here for years. I think the city should really re-examine this as an alternative and delist it from the alternatives being suggested here. So you have a wonderful cultural resource, a commons. People come, join together, they recreate, they get organic food, farmers come together every Wednesday, and it's just a wonderful place for music, and it creates this parking lot actually creates a site for community involvement and fun, and with children, families, and everything. It'd be a shame to have that removed. So when you're going through this deliberation in your study, let's look at their long-term effects of removing this valuable site downtown. Okay, and there can be, I think with the money involved here, having worked in facilities planning and working with architects, we can easily revamp this building and put it maybe three stories high, have the facilities upgraded, have plenty of room. And in the interim, you can find other buildings downtown to move the stacks and the structure. Thank you very much.
Nicely done, Martin. I'm Colonel Terry Maxwell, and I've been involved with the Defense Department in buying billions of dollars worth of things, including construction. And I'm very disappointed in the Santa Cruz County government, because I've also, when I had was younger, I worked with Ralph Nader on challenging the corruption of Marion Barry's city government in Washington, D.C. And the fix was in for the contractors, and the bribery was in for the city council, and the bribery was in for city employees and city contracting people. It disappoints me what I've seen in Santa Cruz County, repeated. Now, fundamentally, I want to underscore everything that Mark Lee said as well. I've seen this rodeo, this scheme, I've seen this situation before, most recently in the Cabrillo bonds, $634 million to be inflicted upon every property owner in Santa Cruz County at $25 almost per 100,000 of assessed valuation. Countywide, $634 million. Mr. Lee and I stood up and we asked Cabrillo, explain that to us. We hit him with public records requests multiple times. They couldn't justify any of it. And they could sort of justify $15 million. Why were they asking for $634 million to be inflicted on the taxpayers? Because they could get away with it. Because the underwriters out of San Francisco were going to make 11% reportedly. Because there was no proper responsibility and there was corruption on the Board of Trustees of Cabrillo College. And I don't say things I haven't got evidence for. You're part of government. And I applaud you all for being willing to serve to help the community address the needs of a library and the facilities. I applaud that. I also applaud Mr. Lee and others in my group that challenge stupidity, corrupt motivated stupidity, and mismanagement successfully, and thus Cabrillo Bonds failed by 3% after a complete lie. This is a lie. That building across the street could be, or down the street, could be renovated. You could renew, model, and renovate the existing building at a fraction of the cost of $29 million or $23 million or possibly $37 million if you have the overruns you've experienced here. Responsibility for the taxpayers' money manifests, requires, and mandates that you do what's smart and prudent and sensible. Once again, that entire building could be configured, encapsulated, the existing superstructure could be incorporated to add two or three floors above. And if the library staff is a little bit inconvenienced while there's construction and has to work around it, I'm sorry, that's the job you have. You don't have my sympathy for doing your job under difficult circumstances. I've been in similar construction situations, you know, in the military, where we worked around it as a team. That was our commitment, to be efficient. So I would hope library management would see the need for that, okay, clearly. And by the way, your numbers, 25, 26, 8, and 3 million, is only 62 million, but you indicated you're going to spend 67 million. Your accounting is already off, or your management of other people's money.
No one. That was everyone on the list.
There's a woman in the audience that would like to speak.
Well, I'm probably one of the few that remember the Carnegie Library across the street, and I still miss it. And we went on a field trip from SoCal grade school. I also went to the San Francisco Public Library on Saturdays. When I went to San Francisco State, we could take the bus. And I was also a student assistant at Humboldt State Library, and I still have enough strength to help you move some books if that's what it takes. And I don't want everything to just disappear into the past like all my childhood. And I desperately don't want this horrendous big garage that's supposed to be a library. Thank you.
So with our goal of ending by 8:30, does anyone have any comments, questions, or concerns? I really want to thank you very much for your service here. You can see that there's a lot of love in this community for the public library system and deep concern about the direction we go. We have our work cut out for us. But I actually think you'll find it a fascinating and interesting process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.